Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to this session, which is called Overcoming Fetishes, Solutions That Work. My name is Bernadette, and I'm a sexaholic.
Hi, Bernadette.
I will be your leader for the session. In the spirit of the fifth tradition, to carry this message, this session will be recorded. The recorder will not be turned off during the session. If you don't wish to be recorded, you may participate by listening. We ask that those who choose to share step up to the mic, sit over there, remove it, so that those who listen to the recording can follow this discussion. And we ask that you don't touch the mic when you come up. After a moment of silence, will you please join me in the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. The essay purpose. Sexaholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and to become sexually sober. There are no dues or fees for SA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. SA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sexually sober and help others to achieve sexual sobriety. I want to start by saying that I can safely say that in my entire life until last night, I've never fallen out of bed. But I was so worked up about this. And finally, I sat there with all my covers all over me, and I said, okay, God, I get it. Stop ruminating. It's taken me 3 years to agree to get this taped. A lot of people have asked, and I just feel like it's just a higher level of putting myself out there. I have issues from my past about certain kinds of exposure. But I've spoken to my spiritual director, therapist, a friend in the fellowship, a really good friend, a priest friend that's known me for years, and my sponsor. They've all read this because I made them, and they gave me input, and I've spent like hours on it, and so please indulge me. I'm going to be rather formal and read it. It takes about 20 minutes. Okay, thank you. My name is Bernadette, and I am a sexaholic. I've been sober since June 2nd, 2003. Well, I have an enormous amount of gratitude to this fellowship for helping me extensively along the journey toward healing. I will admit that this is somewhat scary to me because a lot will be revealed. But after months of prayer and guidance from my higher power, whom I choose to call God, as well as from people both in and out of our fellowship who have advised me with love, I have discerned that this is what I need to do so that I might give back. I ask God to enable me to feel His presence in a special way as I present my story, especially what He has helped me to see at this point in my recovery as the way to move away from my addiction and ever closer to Him. I want to start with where I am now. I feel as if my life has been transformed in a way that is hard to describe, certainly in the time I have here with all of you. My eyes have been opened such that I look at each of you, specifically your bodies, which are in truth all that my senses can experience of you, and see what is awesome and glorious. I can look at my own body, cellulite, wrinkles, age marks, and all, and I can now say to myself, thanks be to God for creating me. I've come to understand over the past year or so what it means to be human, specifically a female member of the greatest species of all creation. I am now on a path to really understand what it is to be a woman and to respect and live the attributes of femininity as God calls for me to live them. Also, I am learning to honor each and every man as the glorious masculine being that he is, and to praise God for each man's sexuality as a complement to my female sexual identity. What I am having difficulty describing accurately here in such a few words are the messages that can be captured in the term theology of the body, which for me is the single most valuable tool I have ever experienced to overcome my shameful sexual obsessions. I am passionately pursuing this worldview because I believe that it has the potential to change our entire world, one glorious created human being at a time. It is about not only appreciating, but celebrating our sexuality in the way that God has always intended it to be celebrated. It's all about seeing each other rightly. I am a firm believer in the concept of sin, but perhaps the meaning of sin, as I have come to understand it, needs to be clarified. It is not simply doing bad things, things I regret, things I believe that God does not will for me to do. Rather, is what a dear friend and mentor taught me over this past year. Sinning in archery means missing the mark, or perhaps missing the target altogether. That is a very appropriate definition for me, since what brought me to the darkest place in my life 5.5 years ago were the small choices and omissions that gradually took me off course and caused me to miss the mark so completely. That target that I now seek on a daily basis is doing the will of God, which ultimately leads me to an incredible sense of great joy and inner peace. I say ultimately because even now I sometimes experience a strong desire to resist where I must aim. Yet I know in my heart that's the only way to direct my arrow, because when I hit the target, there is no greater satisfaction. My acting out modes were at their worst from 2001 through 2003, after so many life events and choices led to a sense of utter worthlessness. I realized that so many in my world had no idea that I was leading a double life. I had been working full-time and had 3 middle school-aged children, and I was quite involved in the church of my upbringing. Yet I had been slipping away from life more and more until I found myself peering out over the Hudson River on the George Washington Bridge, begging God to take me home. I did this a number of times over a few weeks until the transit police got tired of listening to me lie about why I was there. How did I get to that place? I had over the past 2 years been extensively involved in the dark world of sadomasochism, in one particular S&M dungeon in New York City, as well as in hotel rooms and in the secluded houses of older men. I chose older men because in my distorted perception of reality, they were paternal. These men were as obsessed with harming me as I was obsessed with experiencing the pain they were inflicting. I set up many meetings through S&M sites on the internet with these men. Men I had never met, presumptuously laying out the ground rules beforehand so that actual sex acts would not be performed, because after all, I was married and went to church regularly. I told myself that this was not so bad because I was merely setting out to get high on the pain, which was my means of escape from what I considered the unbearable reality of my life. Of course, my plans were never executed quite the way I had laid them out, because once I was in the presence of these men, clearly stronger than I, all bets were off. This did not stop me, however, after a week or two, as the bruises and other damage to my body began to heal, from setting up new meetings. No one was present to me while I was engaged in these acts. The men were simply an agent of the harm, and with my eyes closed, I would forget they were there. While at the club, and once on an S&M weekend at a resort that had been closed to the public for our insane purposes, I would space out and forget that I was there, exposed for so many to see. I was on occasion drawn to ask others who seemed as otherwise functional as I seemed to myself, "What are we doing here?" I literally interviewed people because I wanted to understand how we each got to this dreadful place. A student at Columbia University who was on the dean's list, a published writer, and other reasonably successful professionals were among those I questioned. It is only clear to me now that I was asking the wrong people, asking the wrong questions. By this time, I am sure you can see how relevant my story is to the topic of this breakout session, which is entitled Overcoming Fetishes, Solutions That Work. My primary acting out mode, seeking harm from older men, certainly qualifies as a fetish, which is a term I would like for the remainder of this talk to be replaced with the word obsession so as to be less triggering. Let me be more specific about what we have come to regard as obsessions back in New Jersey, where we actually have meetings specifically devoted to this topic. We define them for our purposes as sexual fantasies and activities that are considered atypical and, from our perspective, particularly shameful. Example of these fantasies and activities are fixations on body parts or objects, exhibitionism, voyeurism, cross-dressing, and sadomasochism. We would say that any acting out mode that is hard to admit in the context of a regular meeting could meet that criterion. While we were discussing the development of this new meeting, it was estimated that a clear majority of regularly attending members, 3/4 or more, have at least one mode of acting out that they are too ashamed to admit. In time, we are hoping that this special meeting does not need to exist, because we will all be willing and able to help our sexaholics, regardless of whether they have involve themselves in stereotypical modes of acting out or not. Again, it's all about seeing each other rightly. Getting back to my quest for understanding the basis of my acting out, my therapist has been a great help in this regard. God sent me to him through a lifelong friend who told me after learning about my trips to the bridge in 2003 that this man could probably put me on the path to recovery. This therapist told me that he would accept me as a patient only on the condition that I went to a meeting of the meetings of an organization called Sexaholics Anonymous. At that point, I had never been to any 12-step meeting of any kind. I discovered immediately that there were virtually no women in attendance. But God helped me to see right from the start that this would not be an obstacle for me, because as soon as I told my story, a few of the men in each of the various meetings made me feel at home, as if I were their sister. This sense of belonging is something that has caused me to become sober from the day I started that June in 2003. I've been blessed with sobriety ever since. This did not mean, however, that I was free from all obsession. I still wanted my husband to hurt me. We had been married for 17 years, and at that point and throughout our marriage, I had convinced him to hurt me whenever we were intimate. I also continued to cut myself, just as I had been doing in my high school years. This could in some ways be considered a form of masturbation for me, since I was getting high from the experience, and it was done while I was alone. It helped me forget the emotional pain of the moment. Because none of these actions indicated a technical loss of sexual sobriety, my sponsor, who has been incredible from the beginning, advised me not to set back my sobriety date when I cut, knowing that doing so might cause me to lose all hope and to subsequently return to the clubs and to acting out with other men. In any case, I knew I had a very long way to go. At my lowest point in 2003, I lost my job. I don't think I was found out, but even so, my performance was sketchy, since I often showed up for work feeling, in a certain sense, hungover from the experience of the night before. On those days, I had left my three children at home while I went out. They were 15, 14, and 12 years old at the time. I now know that I was feeling very much alone when God was right there all along, and all I needed to do was to surrender my feelings of loneliness and inadequacy to him. Knowing that that could have saved all the pain that I caused my children, with whom I had stopped interacting. Before the worst of this, I had been extremely involved in their school activities and social lives. But when I started setting up these meetings, my involvement with them stopped almost completely. I am still so sorry for causing them the loss of their mother throughout those years at a very crucial time in their development. I am also sorry for making my husband worry as much as he did. He lived with the knowledge that his wife was seeking damage from men who were also on occasion extracting sexual favors just because they could. My husband is truly an incredible gift from God. He has loved me and stood by me through so very much. When I started going to SA meetings and to see my therapist on a regular basis, my healing began. One blessing after another was heaped upon me. I was told about a job by another sexaholic, a job which turned out to be the most spiritually enriching work experience of my life. I am still there and thank God every day that I am able to stay, even though it pays so much less than the other jobs that I have since been offered. We are in considerable debt. My husband and I realize that this is where I need to be. It has been a place of enormous growth. One of the best parts of the situation is that those in management know all about my past and accept me anyway. This is such an incredible relief. I will be giving them the CD when I return because I want them to know how grateful I am that they took a chance on me 5 years ago. The most recent gift from God is an awareness of the concepts of the theology of the body, which I mentioned at the beginning of this talk. I want to do what I can with every free moment I have from this point on to help others, especially fellow sexaholics, to understand how freeing it is to live in awareness of these truths. Again, in a nutshell, it's all about seeing rightly, which means experiencing a sense of great wonder and joy when viewing or thinking about one's own body and the bodies of others, both male and female. I've come to understand a great deal about obsessions in general, including where they may have arisen, with the help of my therapist. Let me start with what I know to be the origin of mine. When I was very young and continuing into my teen years and into my young adulthood, I was raised by someone who was very violent. I am now convinced that she was mentally ill and that her own horrific past caused her to be this way. Her rages were unpredictable and terrifying. When she beat us, she would become very angry if we cried out. And when she was finished, it would exhaust her in a way that she would no longer be a threat to us that night. So in essence, the beatings induced sleep because we could rest peacefully after they were over. Because she was so easily agitated, there was no way for us to express emotions of our own. nor could we have friends over, which considerably affected our ability to become socialized. I came to feel unworthy of even being considered a girl. I felt inhuman. There was no one around who could compensate for the bad feelings I experienced from her. In addition, I was molested by three different people in my preteen life, one young male relative over a six-year period, and two unrelated adult males. I always felt very bad about these experiences and did not tell anyone about them except twice. In both circumstances, what I told was dismissed as unimportant, and I was treated with disdain. The result was that I felt responsible, even though I did not want any of this to happen. I began to feel disdain for myself. This is why I always associated sex with the need to be punished. Since all sexual experiences had been associated with feelings of shame for letting them happen, from childhood to adulthood, I sought pain every time I engaged in sexual activity, even when it was with my own husband. Only in therapy did I come to these realizations. I did not know any of this at the times of my acting out. I have learned that we all have reasons for our obsessions. There is no longer a need for a deep search up for meaning in my case, but many of us don't have a clear memory of what happened when we first experienced some level of comfort with the object or activity that has now become our obsession. Whether we ever learn the origin or not, the important thing is to believe that it is not our fault. That sense of comfort arose at some point as a coping mechanism. We may have survived the crisis that generated a perceived need for that escape mechanism in our past, but the mechanism remains an integral and destructive part of our life. We now need to surrender that object or activity, which we can do as soon as we look to God and to one another for the comfort that we are trying in vain to get from our obsession. I have come to understand that so many of us here in this room have experienced, and perhaps continue to experience, alienation from our own bodies, from those around us, maybe from the human race as a whole. But look at us. We have bodies that reflect the incredible gift God has given to all of us. We may be ill or aging, or believe ourselves to be in other ways physically imperfect, but that does not mean we have not reaped the benefits of having been born, of having been given a free will, an intellect, a spirit, and a body to go out and experience life on this planet in all of its splendor and majesty. This is where I am in my journey now. I have come to this realization. In closing, I will summarize what I have presented so far and include some additional insights that I have gained up to this point in my journey with regard to solutions for overcoming my obsessions. First, I asked for help. When I began to realize that I needed help, I asked for it. Some of this took great courage. For example, a great mentor of mine is an internationally known speaker, a proponent of the theology of the body, and my spiritual director has had a personal relationship with great people such as Mother Teresa. As complex as their lives are, both of them said yes when I asked them for their ongoing help. You can probably imagine how scary it was for me to do that, but I have learned that the worst that can happen when I ask for help, either in or out of the fellowship, is that the person cannot oblige. I have learned not to take it personally and move on. I have learned that God always provides. Second, I use my imagination for good. All of us sexaholics seem to possess the ability to live inside our own heads. Because we have fertile imaginations, the source of our addiction can be carried out in there. This is almost always a liability, but I have learned to use it to help me rather than to hurt myself. I imagine that the God of my understanding holding me, letting me feel loved, protecting me from harm, looking into my eyes as if I am a child in his arms. As I see the look of joy in his eyes, I am his beloved. I don't need to look for love in all the wrong places. He offers the best love there is. I have begun to look at others as I believe God sees them. We are each wonderfully made by our God. If we try, we can look at one another and see what God sees. That is what he intended when he created us. I find it comes more easily with practice. A person I don't like, I look again and there is this amazing and wonderful being standing before me. A man who would otherwise trigger me, I look again and there is this glorious being. His body is still visible to me, but the feelings I have are no longer lust, they are love. I found that looking away is ultimately not the goal. Seeing rightly is. Initially, I did have to avoid people, places, and things, but now I can confidently look at a man with the right kind of love. I recognize his potential. That is, see what I believe each and every man is called by God to be, confident, respectful of self and others, determined to do what he can to make his world a better place. His identity is expressed in his body, which in reality is the only thing I can experience with my senses that identify him to me. Similarly, I'm beginning to see the potential in each woman, as I believe she is called by God to be, confident, graceful, respectful of self and others, radiant, receptive, loving, kind, all of which are expressed by her body, because again, that is all I have at my disposal that enables me to know her. I want to develop those qualities in myself. I believe that when I look for the good in others, it can be seen and ultimately expressed because they sense what I am seeking. That is how I try to live now. Finally, I am just now acknowledging that my obsessions are a disconnect from reality, that truth as objective reality is all that we need. If we really knew the truth, we would seek it and follow it always. Truth is found in my higher power. This means acknowledging that the way we perceive that object, body part, or situation in our addictive state does not constitute reality. The reality is that those objects, for the most part, have real purposes in the real world. That those body parts are integrated into a human being gloriously created by God, and that that situation is a destructive fantasy of our own making. I believe that rooting myself in reality, which takes practice and for me an understanding of the concept of mindfulness, can eliminate my distortions of truth and beauty. Inherently, all of God's creatures are truly beautiful when not distorted by my own fantasies. I can choose to see that true beauty. Thank you for listening. May you feel God's constant presence along your journey. Okay, I'm going to move the mic over there. Please, if you come up, just talk into the mic, and I guess for a group here, maybe 2 or 3 minutes would be a good idea. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Joel, and I'm a recovering sexaholic. I was at a newcomers meeting last week, a meeting, my last SA meeting before I came to this convention. And in newcomers meetings, I would make it a point to at least share some of the very slight details of my story, because I'm not exactly sure if I, in a newcomers meeting, want to go out and tell, you know, all the details of my obsessions. I'm not sure if that's appropriate. But on the other hand, I think the one thing I always try and share at a newcomers meeting is whatever brings you here, it's been heard before. And that's something I've really had to come to just accept. My first convention was in Washington, I guess 2 years ago. And you know, I get to the convention, I get the schedule, and there's this thing on there. There's a topic, less topics, difficult to discuss. And in that room, I heard people talk about all different sorts of obsessions, but it was all, you know, we were all together, and we were talking about it, and that was such a relief. And slowly, even in my meetings, I can start to come out about this and talk to other people, you know, even just one-on-one or with my sponsor, and slowly open up more and more in meetings. And I think, like what Bernadette said, just ask for help, being able to talk to other people. I think that in and of itself was the single greatest benefit I have come to get from this program, is to ask other people for help. And I'd like to thank the help I received from you. God bless you all.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Elliot. I'm a sexaholic.
Hi, Elliot.
My obsessions are S&M, voyeurism, exhibitionism. And 3 years ago when I entered the program, I could not talk about those things. I couldn't even mention them. Today, when I qualify at a meeting, I specifically state S&M pornography obtained on the computer at work, which pretty much covers all three of those. Voyeurism, exhibitionism. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when I, about a year ago, I had a major slip, ended up in a rehab center down south, and it was there that I learned that I have to talk about my specific fetishes. If not, I'm keeping secrets and my disease will flourish in secrets. It's not always easy to do. I mean, especially when there are newcomers in a meeting and I'm afraid that I'm going to trigger them. Or worse, I'm afraid I'm going to trigger me by talking about it. You know, there's always the question of when to talk about this and when not to. You know, I'm glad that in New Jersey there is a place to go to talk about the specific obsessions, you know, the specific fetishes. It's really a wonderful tool to have a place to go to talk about the obsessions. One of the things, as I said, one of the things that I've learned is I have to talk about this. If I don't, that which is hidden continues to grow. It's kind of strange. It's exactly the opposite of flowers. Flowers need the light in order to survive. This disease needs the dark in order to survive. And so I say again today that I'm Elliot. I'm a sexaholic. And my fetishes are S&M-related pornography obtained on the internet at work. And I thank you all for letting me share.
Thank you. My name is Madam Sexaholic. And my disease manifests itself in fantasy, pornography, lust in all forms, compulsive masturbation, objectifying, rubbernecking, women, people, places, things. I cross boundaries I thought I never would by going to massage parlors and prostitutes and just looking online and getting lust hits from calling massage therapists even and not planning on going to them. And the and Bernadette, I just love you. From, you know, as far as I met you at this conference. What was that, 05, I think, back when we were in Nashville?
Started in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm.
And they had a fetish meeting, and I never considered myself having fetishes, you know, really, but, you know, body parts and all those things. And I guess, and then I heard you talk in that meeting, too, and I was like, wow, that's powerful for a woman to speak the truth. And that's what I liked about your talk, was just the truth and the healing in it. And I guess my hope, too, is that we don't need special meetings, you know. It's not like AA, like we have whiskey meetings, we have beer meetings, we have, you know. What I've come to realize is it's just all lust. You know, I can feel shame. I can feel shame about one guy in my meeting just talking, well, his little thing was pornography and masturbation, and then I got to talk about going to prostitutes. You know, and I can compare that, you know, the comparison of the disease, and it's just... it's all lust, is what I realize. I think a fetish is a societal term. For me, it's lust. It's just how my lust manifested itself. And my hope is that, certainly in my groups, that anybody can talk about anything of how their lust manifests itself, and that they feel no shame about it. Because for me, I have to talk about it. That's what I had to come in here and talk, tell all my dirty stuff, all my dark secrets. If I wanted to get well and stay well. And no one told me I was a bad guy. They gave me hugs. They said, keep coming back. You know, they didn't say, you're a bad boy, like I grew up with. They didn't say, shame on you. Like the mother that I heard from all the time. And the, I think I'm in the same religion as you, too. And I love the theology of the body, too. And not that, and that's, you know, I guess what It says in the big book of alcoholics too that we can go to religion and go and find whatever you find from there, and that we can go to therapists and we can go to outside for more help. And it takes me all of that too. It takes me individual therapy, group therapy. You know, it takes me all kinds of 12-step and what I feel is healing and God healing me. And so it's, you know, what a gift you are, and what a gift all of us are too. To each other and to program and to society, in my opinion. You know, we're the ones trying to carry a message of health, where a lot of society is carrying the message of disease and lust and sickness. So I don't know, I just admire you from afar. It's always nice when I get to see it, these things. And I appreciate your courage, and I hope to have the same courage as I continue this walk. Thank you.
Thank you. Good
morning. My name is Daryl, and I'm a grateful recovering lust addict.
Hey, Daryl.
This particular subject is me, literally, because when I was really deep into internet, instant messaging, calling people on the phone, one of my user IDs was Mr. Fetish. And I would literally spend hours and hours per day and per night till 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning searching out people who had similar fetishes. Searching profiles. Hours. I would create a profile online and put as many fetishes as I could think of. And what became particularly dangerous for me is now I know that my disease is progressive, as most compulsions are. But what I did not realize until later was that my fetishes became progressive. Things that I had no interest in 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, when I would meet someone that I had in common with, I would meet someone that I had things in common with, as far as one group of fetishes would go, somehow I got drawn into their fetishes. I always thought, well, my thing is my thing. Well, no, it expanded. And it expanded to areas that were very, very scary, dangerous, and sometimes illegal. So when I was younger and masturbating to fully clothed women who happened to be wearing a fur coat, I thought that was perfectly justifiable. Not realizing that when I was 5 years old, I used to play in my grandmother's fur coats, completely nude. You know, obviously, I didn't realize then that was going to cause problems for me later in life. But when I got into recovery, I thought, well, maybe I can just hold on to this. And I wasn't looking at any nude people. I wasn't going to sex sites, but I continued to go to these fetish websites regarding that. And what I found was that after I had been engaging that for a while, well, I could not break off into the old things. So fetishism for me is definitely progressive. It's very, very dangerous for me. And I really appreciate the sharing. That was wonderful. But boy, it's a lot of freedom to not have to worry about my fetishism growing today. Thanks.
Thank you, Darryl.
Thank you, Darryl.
Thank you,
Darryl.
I'm Rob. I'm a grateful recovering sex addict.
Hey, Rob.
Thank you so much, Bernadette. Thank you for your courage and your humility. And I think it's really, as I came into this meeting, I expected maybe 3 or 4 guys in here. it's really encouraging to see everyone in here. Just your courage and humility to come in here. I want to thank you specifically, Bernadette, for talking about fetish as obsession. Because for me, that helps me to level the field, because in the arena of addictions, you know, sex addiction is the one thing that's unacceptable, it seems, in society. If you can talk about being an addicted a gambler or an alcoholic, or any number of other addictions in society, but you just, you know, people don't really accept it, won't accept it if you talk about being a sex addict. And then within sex addiction, there's fetish and fantasy, which is almost like the unacceptable thing within sex addiction. But really, what I've come to learn in my, I don't know, about 8 years in the program is that my specific fetishes are really obsessions, and really they're specific obsessions within my sex addiction. And when I started to see that and realize that, surrender does kill the obsession, and then I started to realize that whatever my obsession is, I can find recovery and healing and sobriety and health. And it's really just encouraging, because then it gives me hope to be able to help others in the program. And as I see others and hear others in the meetings share, the little... occasional bright lights when someone will mention a fetish or mention addiction, just, you know, and maybe they're sharing, then I realize, wow, there's someone else like me. Because, you know, of course, our addiction, you know, thrives in the dark, thrives in isolation, and this part of our addiction helps us to even isolate more, because we think even sex addicts in general don't wrestle with these issues. But my particular obsession has been cross-dressing, and that has caused me. Why we do these things, I don't know. Why I do these things, I don't know. You know, I did have a difficult upbringing with a very emotionally abusive mother, so maybe I'm chasing after that femininity or something. But you know what? What it comes down to is I use that as my drug. I mean, that was the thing that fueled me and excited me throughout the years, and as I started to get some recovery, some sobriety, I realized that was the real thing that was drawing me away and trying to get me to fall off get off the track. But one guy in one of the meetings one time shared that he struggled with cross-dressing, and I was like, wow, okay, you know. I spoke to him immediately after the meeting, and just kind of shared, I kind of struggle with similar stuff, and pretty soon I was able to talk more and more, and that guy was willing to be my sponsor. So it's like God does reach out. He reached out to me in an area that I thought I was very much alone, and I found that God did answer my prayers and gave me a sponsor who could help me in that area. And even if it wasn't a sponsor, I was willing to at least have someone who I could talk with about it after a meeting, or pray with about it, and someone who I could call. But I thank God that even in this thing that I thought was, to me, shameful and led me into more and more debased, spiraling down into more and more debased activities and acting out, that there was hope, that I could expose it, that I didn't have to keep it in, that I didn't have to hide it, I didn't have to live in this cave, even within Sexaholics Anonymous, and that, rooms like this, and courage that you have, Bernadette, and other leaders who have been able to expose this, we can find fellowship and freedom and hope. So I thank God for this program. It's been able to give me sobriety in this area of my life. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Nicholas, and I'm a sex addict. I got a fetish about the food, and I remember that this is really the first sexual impulse that I can identify in my life. I mean, I remember I was about 4 or 5 years old, and I remember I had this. I was really obsessed by watching another boy of my age feed, and so that was really before I ever discovered masturbation. So this is really my my first sexual impulse, and well, this is my second convention, and I just said that 6 months ago in the other convention in Akron, Ohio, and that thing is really getting lifted. It's getting out of my head now, and that's wonderful. So I guess the only way for me to get rid of that is just to say it loud and just let God take it through you guys, because this is the biggest misconnection I have, you know. This is crazy. And I still act out thinking about that, but it's getting slowly removed out of my mind. That's really wonderful. Thank you.
My name is Sean, and I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Sean.
I've seen you many times, especially the one and I met you first time in the meeting, and when you talked about this in Philadelphia. And I remember that meeting because it was huge. It was standing room only in that meeting. And I remember a little while back, I told my sponsor about something that happened to me. And I met this guy once when I was in the city, and I happened to be into photography, and so was he. So we started taking my pictures, but things got a little crazy. I use that word. And every time when I told my sponsor the story, he just couldn't stop laughing. I mean, he was like, he thought it was hilarious. And that made me feel so ashamed. To the point that, for a while, I couldn't even tell him anything. And sometimes he just uses that to remind me that when I tell him, hey, I'm doing all right, he says, oh, really? Do you remember that time? The story? And sometimes he just does it to remind me that I have a long ways to go, and there are a lot of fetishes I have that I wouldn't even tell anybody, even some of my best friends, what's going on, what I'm into. Because, yeah, I'm afraid that they would find out and, you know, and humiliate me with it. And sometimes it hurts. But yet, that's what it does. It hurts us. When I think that I can handle it on my own, it hurts God, it hurts others, and it hurts, you know, our friends. What would they think if they found out what we were up to? Would they change? Would they love us any differently? My sponsor doesn't love me any differently. He loves me just the same. He wants me to get better. He doesn't want to see me in pain a lot. But sometimes I just need to grow and be reminded of things that I've done. I don't think he did it to humiliate me per se. I think he did it to remind me that how far I could go in anything. Because if I had left to my own devices, I could go, my imagination go haywire and crazy. And I know that for a fact. Thanks for sharing, Bernadette. It was a blessing.
Thanks, Sean. I'm Ron, sexaholic.
Hey, Ron.
I really didn't want to come up here. So I knew I really did need to come up here. Thanks a lot for hosting a meeting on the subject. And I also was I kept trying to think what I was going to say when people were sharing, and I kept, no, listen to the others share. And then when I get up here, then I'll decide what I'm going to say, think about what I'm going to say. I mean, this issue has been my issue for as long as I can remember. I can remember far pre even concept of sex, having certain fetishes, certain fantasies. I used to even go and I used to tell my parents, I'm going to go and dream. And what I used to do then is basically go and sort of either lay in bed or just sit someplace and just drift off into my head, into fantasies, into fetishes, and just disappear there. And I started that when I was so young, and it just became a natural way of life. And at some point, I guess it switched to become used for when I was a kid. It may have just been boredom, and later on, it became boredom and stress, and it's continued that way today. That sometimes, even when there's absolutely no stress, when everything seems very at peace, my mind will tend to drift off into these obsessive kinds of thoughts. And I was a little even concerned to come to this meeting because I thought, well, you know, maybe thinking about this isn't a good thing. You know, sort of just let it go and focus on the big problem, lust. But I think that the comment about bringing it under the light is really what's important. And I think that's really why I needed to come up here and share about it. So I'm grateful to all of you for being in the meeting. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, my name's Branson, and I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Branson.
I just want to express my thankfulness that as I step back and, because like some other shares, I really don't want to be up here, and as I step back and let my higher power walk me and my addict up here and bring us both into the light, it's really grateful for that. And this may be one of the few places, as I stated earlier, there aren't a lot of, even within sexaholism, there's this dark cave of obsession. And things that are very difficult to talk about, very hard for me to talk about, and I certainly don't feel I have the ability to talk about them in my meetings back where I'm from. And it's nice to realize that the remedy is to bring it into the light, and this is where I can do it. And you know, I just you know, feel like, you know, I'll let step back and let God and my higher power walk me, Branson, up here, and my addict, Bruce, who my therapist has decided that would be helpful for me to give my addict a name. And he chose that name because Bruce is the name of my father. And I don't want to be triggery, so I'll just say he forced me to witness unspeakable things. As he, brutally tormented and harmed someone else. And I have really no, way of knowing what exactly happened, because I was just very young. I feel I was probably still a toddler, and it may be merciful that I don't know exactly what went on in the room. But I have all these feelings that I felt, and it's been hard to bring them into the light and just say that these feelings that I felt caused me to also indulge in the S&M world with the internet and pornography. And you know, like was stated earlier, it is all lust, but like with alcoholism, there is this thing called moonshine that's illegal, and it's made in the dark, and it's anyway, I feel like, you know, it's just difficult for me to talk about, my desires to want to be in the S&M world and find, you know, a potential victim. And I'm really grateful that I came here. I have not victimized anyone yet, and I want to make sure that I bring, you know, Branton up here and also Bruce, my addict, and put us both into the light and just acknowledge that, you know, this addiction, if I keep it into the light, then I can avoid going out and making my own moonshine, so to speak. I can not go into the dark and I can stay in the light. So thank you for, but there's a place where I can talk about this. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Hi everyone, my name's Eric, and I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic.
Hey Eric.
I am really glad to be in this meeting. I came to SA 9 years ago. This is my 16th conference. And to my knowledge, we started having these breakout sessions on fetishes in about 2001. And some conference organizers have talked about not holding this meeting, and there have been a couple of conferences where it wasn't held, and I've been one of those that spoke strongly for it. Because, as several people have said, this is one of the aspects of our disease that cannot be talked about in the open rooms. And there are reasons why it can't. In Pensacola, at a newcomer meeting about 5 years ago, I shared my addictions, shared my acting out in sadomasochism and submissive sex and urination play and object play and all the things that I've done. And the newcomer was chased away and she never came back. Even just 6 months ago in Akron, in one of the other breakout meetings, I was sharing a point about one of the things that was relevant to the meeting, and along the way to the point, I mentioned my desire for submissive sex, and a hand went up. And somebody couldn't handle that in the meeting. We have to constantly walk this balance in this. And putting a microphone in this meeting is another huge step. One of the reasons why we have this meeting is so that we can bring the light on the things that we never talk about anyplace else. And I actually was one of those that spoke against the microphone because it prevents many of us from doing that. And yet, recording this meeting and having a chance for other people to hear that there is hope, I think, is a very important thing. Mm-hmm. And I've got to give you the credit for pushing for this, Bernadette, because I think it's the right thing to do, too. And that's what I want to bring more than anything else, is this hope. Because 9.5 years ago, when I came to SA, my life was in complete disarray. I had chased off after things that were so extreme that I had destroyed my career and had zero income for months. I had destroyed my marriage and my wife had left me. And I was doing things that were so risky that my life was at risk all the time. And I was convinced that if I didn't find a solution, that I would be dead within months in some sordid front page incident. That was 9.5 years ago. And today, this is absolutely awesome, because after 7 months of separation, my wife and I rejoined. And after about a year of struggle and trying to find a spiritual life, my career took off in new directions. And now I have, and my wife and I celebrate 40 years of marriage this coming summer. And the best part about that is that the last 8-9 years of marriage have been the marriage we always wanted for the 30 years before. We love each other and care for each other in ways I never could when I was lost in the world that I was lost in. And my career fulfills me, and everything I do, I help other people and enjoy what I'm doing. And I come to meetings like this, and I get to help people every time I come to meetings. And best of all, I don't put my life at risk anymore. And that's the real hope. If you are struggling, as all of us have struggled, there is that hope. This recovery program does work. Thanks.
Thanks, Eric.
I'll be brief. I believe we're on time or behind. Patrick, I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Patrick.
I'm here in Nashville and hadn't planned on coming to the conference. And my sponsor recommended it. He said it'd be very good for your recovery. And you know, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna have chances to see some family, some little nieces and nephews who I love and bring me great joy. And just, you know, I don't know if it's gonna work out. And he showed me the. He said, well, just look at the schedule and see if you see something that's important to you. And I think it's one of the first ones, because it's 8 o'clock in the morning. It was a fetish one. I was like, I've gotta go. I've gotta go, because since I was 4 years old. Four or three, somewhere in there, saw a picture of a woman tied up and gagged on television. Mm. And I have never been aroused and so intrigued and so in my entire life. And I could really relate to the share about going off in your fantasy land. I remember just staying up in bed thinking about my teachers, my friends' mothers, my mom's friends, and just tying them up, gagging them, and making them my own. And, of course, that progresses to abduction, molestation, rape. It's really hard to be gentle to your wife when you know... It's easy to be gentle to your wife, but it's hard to live with the shame that you know that you have these fantasies of really abusing, hurting... Pain's not involved, but just humiliating women. And the fact that it excites you more than sex with your wife, there is a cause. At least my therapist and I think there is, and we think it's a pacifier related. My pacifier got taken away from me. We think maybe that's it. We have to delve deeper into it to really find out, and just kind of just a very shameful thing. But I don't know about you guys. Hearing the rest of y'all share. I don't have any shame against you guys. I have shame for myself. I hear these other things, and I'm like, well, that's nothing to be ashamed about. I'm serious, but I look at myself, I'm like, that is something to be ashamed about. I don't know, I just think we put it on ourselves at times. But, I just want to say I'm honored to hear you guys speak. I'm honored to hear every single one and grateful that I was able to listen and hear you guys. I'm glad you spoke. I'm glad I know things about you like that. Because I know we're not alone. I know I'm not alone, because obviously all these internet sites are not just for me. But thanks for letting me share.
I just want to say, I want to be honest, Eric, you said I pushed for this. I did not push for the recovery. After 3 years, Lee and I compromised that, okay, since I've discerned for so many months, we'll record me and then not put you guys through this. And they said, no, people need to hear this. And I said, nobody's going to share. Like, right until, right before this, I'm like, nobody's going to get up. You guys are crazy. Don't do this to them. Let them share without the mic. And you have, really, I'm so honored to be here. I love you guys, all of you. And you. Okay. Anything you've heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. I'd like to close with the seventh step prayer, please.
Oh. my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you work it, you should run.
Thank you, Bernadette.
What if you don't want to have a question?
I'm too late. New Jersey. Great.
No.
That's the genesis of it.
That was great.
That was a good one.